Hello and welcome to KnitCast. I'm your host, Marie Urshard. My special guest for this edition is Stephanie Pearl McPhee, also known as the Yarn Harlot, and author of At Knit's End, Meditations for Women Who Knit Too Much. Welcome to the show, Stephanie.
Hi, Marie. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to start off by asking where the name Yarn Harlot came from.
I'd written an article for Interweave Press, a back page essay where I talked about my complete inability to be monogamous with any knitting project at all. And at the end I'd said, that's it, I'm a yarn harlot. And the name had stuck.
How long have you been writing?
I've been writing all my life. My grandfather was a writer, so I thought of it really as a realistic job choice. So I'd always been writing essays and bits and pieces and short stories. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, I'd started looking at it as a way to make some money. SARS had come through Toronto and I'd lost my job, and Joe had lost his job as well, and I was broke. So I decided to try writing about knitting and see if it would work for me.
Where did the humorous writing come from? Was that just your natural writing style?
Yeah, I seem to have some problem with seriousness.
What did you do before the writing? What did you and your husband do?
My husband's a record producer, so he'd been doing a lot of American film sound and business up from the States. And I'd been working as a birth attendant and a lactation consultant in and out of the hospitals here. And when SARS came, a lot of the American business stopped coming up, so his business suffered. And I was locked out of the hospitals for about 4 months because I wasn't an essential worker. So we started getting a little bit desperate, and it turned out there was really only two other things I was good at. Mm. I was good at knitting, and I was good at writing. So I started.
A lot of listeners will know you from your blog. So when did you first begin blogging?
I've only been blogging since January of last year, so just over a year. My friend Ken, who's the technical genius behind all of that, gave me the blog as a Christmas present. I'd been desperately jealous of blogs in general for a while, and he thought I might like writing one. Turns out I do.
Let's get back to your book writing, because I want to ask you how the book At Knit's End came about.
Well, it's kind of interesting because it wasn't my idea. I was trying to sell another book, a book that will be published in September, and my agent was shopping it around, and she tried to sell it to Story Publishing, and they said, well, we're not really interested in essays, and they turned it down. And then a couple of months later, they came back to her and said, we're looking for someone who could write something funny about knitting. Do you know anybody like that? And there was me. So they had an idea spoofing the old books from the 70s, Meditations for Women Who Work Too Much, Meditations for Women Who Love Too Much or Do Too Much. And they came up with Knit Too Much. I spoofed off of that and away I went.
I suppose it's one of those things that non-knitters would think to themselves, well, how can knitting be funny?
Yeah, I know. Yarn doesn't look very funny just sitting there. And I think you would think that most knitters are engaged in such a solitary activity that it couldn't be funny. It's really the social aspect of knitting that's funny, and the fact that most knitters somehow manage to come up with a relationship with their knitting projects.
Yes, it's not always a successful relationship.
No, it isn't. The success stories aren't as funny.
Yes. One of my favourite stories is on page 25, and it's about your mother-in-law as a young mother and what used to happen to her knitting if she would knit outside and leave her knitting unattended for a while.
That's right. She had a neighbor. His name was Dick Daw, actually. And she was living in Newfoundland, and the summer's really short. And like most Canadians, the minute the weather turns, it's all about being outside all the time. And so she would go out in the back porch and sit and knit in the sunshine. But because she was a mum, she would have to scoot back into the house all the time to stir a pot or answer the phone or do anything like that. And when she'd come back, her knitting would often be mucked up. Mm. Cables the wrong way, or somebody had knit halfway across the row and then turned back and gone the wrong way. And she always used to think, you know, how did I manage to do that? And it was absolutely years and years later when the neighbor Dick Daw finally admitted that he used to hop over the fence while she was in the house and have a go at it. and then hop back over when he heard her coming.
So he kept this secret from her for years. About 20 years.
About 20 years. She was completely reassured when she found out. She thought she was the world's worst knitter, only sporadically.
She probably thought she'd been losing her mind for the last 20 years as well.
But wouldn't you? I'd be like, you know, I'm pretty good.
This next story just, well, after reading it, I just had to put your book down. I had to go away and do something else because I was so affected by this. I was thinking, oh no. And it's page 57 and it's about your grey sweater, which was the last of a discontinued yarn, and you spent hours finding out a pattern for it. And tell us what happened to it.
Oh, so many things happened to so many sweaters. Is that the one about Joe's brief foray into laundry?
Yes. It is. It is the one.
Oh, that one.
I mean, we're laughing now, but it must have been heartbreaking.
I think you need to learn to let go.
I know, but you laid it out on the bed so you could admire it.
And Joe came up to do a load of laundry. He's only probably done 4 loads of laundry in our entire marriage, so I don't know what provoked him. But he fired it into the wash. It was small. Yeah.
not even big enough for your cat.
No, it was like a doll sweater.
Oh.
Only you couldn't have put it on a doll because it was stiff. It was like a sweater-shaped top pad.
Oh, no. Oh.
Joe doesn't do a lot of laundry anymore.
No, I think it's just as well to keep him away from Mr. Washy, really.
Yes, I have a monogamous relation.
Let's get on to my absolute favourite. I just love this. And it's what happened when you... Now, you're one of these people who likes to knit in the cinema. And I've never quite been able to understand this myself, because that's one thing that I haven't done yet. Because I will find... I remember reading about Teresa, the keyboard biologist knits, saying about how she'd knit through the last Spider-Man film. And I remember thinking, my God, the film... I was just sort of glued to the screen. How could anyone knit through it? But this is a little bit of a cautionary tale about what can happen if you've taken your knitting to the cinema and then you leave it to go to the restroom.
Well, I always knit socks in the movies because it's just round and round and round and there's nothing to it and you can't arse it up too badly. And this humiliates my children to no end, which is my hobby, really, humiliating my children. They're teenagers, it's not hard. Oh God, Mum, you're not going to do that. So I was knitting on a sock going round and round, and I had to go to the washroom, so I'd put it down in my knapsack at my feet, and I'd really quietly untangled myself and gone up the aisle, and I'd walked all the way up and gone through the swinging doors at the end. And they'd gotten about 10 feet away when I was brought up short because I was tied. The yarn was still around my leg. And I had to go all the way back down the aisle, spooling my yarn back. I didn't mean to do that anymore.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh at your misfortune, but that was just so funny. Reading that.
It's really
the
misfortune that's funny, isn't it? Nobody would want to read about it if you said, I cast on a pair of socks, I carried on without incident, and now they're lovely. It's boring.
Yes. But I also like the thing about, you've also made an observation in your book that no matter how wonderful some sort of revelation or something that you've knit, nothing seems to be worth waking up Joe in the middle of the night to show him.
See, I can't believe that. I always think he would love to be woken up for these things, so I'll finish a shawl or something really impressive, and I'll go up the stairs, and because he's a record producer, he works late and gets up late, so I'm always up in the morning while he's still sleeping, and I'll finish something really glorious and go bounding up the stairs and burst into the bedroom and jump on the bed and say, Joe, look, you know, isn't it wonderful? And he always tries to humor me. Yes, dear, it's lovely. But really, there is absolutely no knitting triumph I can achieve that he will think is worth being woken up for.
I think that's the thing. I think we can all just relate to to all of this. And I should say, I mean, the book is called, is sort of subtitled Meditations for Women Who Knit Too Much. But I think men can enjoy, knitting men can enjoy this book as well.
Well, I wanted to call it Meditations for Those Who Knit Too Much. Mm. But it turns out I'm a little more forward-thinking than my publisher.
No.
Authors don't pick the titles of their books, which was just a crushing development for me.
Now, the book is in its third printing. Was that a surprise for you? Oh, my God, fourth now!
Yeah, last week it went for its fourth printing.
Oh, my goodness. Well, maybe by the time this podcast goes live, it'll be in its fifth printing. I wouldn't be surprised.
But I'd been surprised by the whole thing.
But as part of the whole book experience, you've been, well, you're still in the middle of a book tour. And you've spoken to hundreds, if not thousands, of knitters during this tour. Tell me about some of the places that you've been to and your experiences on the tour.
Oh, I don't even know where to start. I've been so many really interesting places. I thought it was going to be really different everywhere I went. I thought, oh, how wonderful it'll be to meet knitters in Memphis who are going to be so different, making different things. I'll learn all new interesting things. And I do learn interesting things. But I've been all over the U.S. now, except for the West Coast that I'm doing soon. And I'm absolutely shocked to find out that it's enough to be knitters. You can completely get along with someone being the only thing you have in common, a little bit of yarn. Or a lot of yarn.
Yes, I think there are a lot of us with a lot of yarn going on there.
Yeah.
The launch for the book was held in the, is it the Toronto Textile Museum? Toronto Museum of Textiles.
Yeah, it was. That was really something, actually. I'm embarrassed to admit that I hadn't actually been to the Museum of Textiles, which is a really interesting place. If anybody lives even vaguely close to Toronto, they should have a look. But it's quilts and really old textiles to do with anything. They have some old padded armor, they have old knitting, and they really encourage and spend a lot of time trying to make people aware of what people are getting up to with textiles and yarn and what's going on. And they were a fabulous place to do it. It was really, really, really a lot of people I hadn't met before. I loved it a lot.
I remember I went there on my trip to Toronto last year, and we sort of looked, there was an educational bit where you could sort of see where sort of yarn comes from. And I remember my other half, who no interest in knitting, but picking up a card with some fleece and having a go at carding fleece on there. Which is quite entertaining for me. I had to go
as well. See, that part of fibre's got tools. They like that.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. Sharp tools.
I believe it was your grandmother who taught you how to knit when you were 5, was it?
I think I wrote that I was 5, but my mother since corrected me and said that I was 4, which I don't recall at all. But it was. My Nana was a professional knitter. She was a proxy knitter. So it used to be that you could go into a yarn shop. She lived in Willowdale, near here in Toronto. And you could go into a yarn shop if you were a non-knitter and pick out yarn and a pattern and then ship it off to her and she'd knit it for you so you could masquerade as a knitter. Seems sort of harsh now, doesn't it?
Yes.
But she taught me when I was 4. I had just learned how to read, and I went out and said, Nana, Nana, I've learned how to read. And she said, well, if you can do something as hard as read, then you can do something as easy as knit. And it turns out she's absolutely right. When you think about it, the English language is extraordinarily complicated. There's 26 pieces of code, and by the time you're 5 or 6 years old, you're expected to be able to read and write all those pieces of code, learn which is which, and that we drive on parkways and park on driveways, and all that sort of... Knitting only has 2 pieces of code, knit and purl.
I wanted to go back to talking to you about your blog, because something you've been doing, something that readers will have heard about on your blog, is Knitters Without Borders. Tell us a bit about that.
Knitters Without Borders was born just after the tsunami in January. My brother-in-law, Ben Chapman, works for Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, here in Toronto. And Doctors Without Borders, they'd received a tremendous outpouring of donations related to the tsunami. And at some point, Doctors Without Borders had to come out and say, we've had enough. We're not going to be able to spend any more money specifically on the tsunami. They were getting into a position where even if you can afford to send 12 doctors, there might not be room for 12 doctors on the ground. And if there's an emergency somewhere else in the world, then all of their money is earmarked for the tsunami and they can't respond. So Doctors Without Borders was making a tremendous appeal for people to donate to their general fund so that they could continue responding to crises around the world. Like in Darfur, where 300,000 people are dead. That's more than the tsunami, but they can't raise any money for it because it's not in the media. So I decided to make an appeal for donations to Doctors Without Borders and decided to call it Knitters Without Borders, Tricoteuses Sans Frontières. And the response was overwhelming. I was absolutely astonished. I'd said to Joe, you know, if we managed to get $1,000, I'd feel good about that. And when I woke up the next morning, I was staggered at the generosity.
How much have you raised so far?
I think we're at $64,000.
Wow. Well, regular visitors to your blog will be well aware of your penchant for knitting socks. Your various socks are also photographed at different locations, and socks have certainly accompanied you. Various socks in progress have accompanied you on the book tour as well.
Yeah, there was a traveling sock last summer that saw the Maritimes and went to Anne of Green Gables' house and went to Top Signal Hill in Newfoundland. And the latest traveling socks have gone everywhere with me on my stops. They look out over scenic vistas in Vermont and, and peer out of hotel room windows in New York. I like to show my knitwear a good time.
They've met various stars as well.
Yeah, the socks just met Gordon Pinsent recently. I don't know if anybody knows who he is outside of Canada, but I think he's probably most famous to Americans and people in the UK as the voice of Babar. Babar the elephant.
Oh, I see. I haven't heard Babar for ages, but I will listen. And next time I hear the elephant speak, I will imagine the song.
Yes, it's yes, Gordon Pinsent.
Yes.
They've met some Canadian rock stars too, so we're still looking to break into the American rock star market with the socks.
Can you tell me what the Canadian yarn scene is like?
Oh, well, you know, there is a Canadian plan to take over the world, and we appear to be doing it mostly with Koigu.
Oh, yes, I love Koigu.
Mm-hmm. I was absolutely astonished when I was in the States to discover kind of how hot it is there. Mm. It tends to be a little bit more commonplace here because it's a Canadian yarn, but it's big all over the place. I was stunned.
Mission Falls as well.
What's that?
I was going to say Mission Falls is big as well.
Yeah, that's right, from Consecon, Ontario. We were there last summer. It's a lovely little place. And Mission Falls is actually virtually the only industry in Consecon, Ontario. So there's that, and of course Fleece Artist, which is my own personal weakness. My yarn mecca is Fleece Artist.
What is it about Fleece Artists that you like so much?
Well, I admit to a little bit of wholesome patriotism, you know, that it's a Canadian yarn made by Canadians, hand-dyed by Canadians. That, and it's lovely stuff. It holds up really well, and it's excellent quality. It's one of the only sock yarns you can get anymore that doesn't have nylon in it and is still beautiful, beautiful colors. It's handmade, and I like that. I like the idea that real people are involved with something that ends up on my feet.
We talked about the next stage of your book tour and the fact that there's another book, but what's next after all that?
Well, with a little bit of luck, I won't be sick of the whole thing. I wandered off and taken up weaving or something. But I'm hoping there'll be more books. And I'm going to keep doing the blog, of course, because the community of knitters that hook up through the blog is so awesome. It keeps me from tormenting my family with my knitting interests. At least there's someone I can wake up in the middle of the night with my knitting. They're in Wales, but
there's always someone you can wake up and show and say, hey, look at this, isn't it great? We'll go, yes.
Yes. Well, I really think that's why I blog. Is because the cat's just never as impressed with the new pair of mittens as she should be, and there's really only so interested Joe can pretend to be. Then having a blog means that you can play show and tell every day. And people show you their stuff, which is even better.
Stephanie Pearl McPhee. And you'll find links to Stephanie's book, or should that be book, on the Knitcast website. That's at www.knitcast.com. You can email me at feedback@knitcast.com. That's also the address to write to if you're interested in sponsoring Knitcast, so do drop me a line if you'd like to talk about that. Thanks to all who voted for Knitcast over at Podcast Alley during May. Every vote counts towards our place in the podcast top 50, but the vote tally is set to zero at the beginning of each month. So if you voted before, then please continue to do so during June. You can also rate us over at podcastpickle.com. Well, I'm Maria Urshard, and that was Knitcast. Thanks for listening.